gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for tuning in to this Red Ice TV featured interview. And today we are talking with Kim Eriksen, who joins us from Denmark to the south of my country, Sweden, of course. Thank you for coming on, Kim. It's great to have you here.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
You bet. Excellent. Thank you for reaching out to me, by the way. I'm very interested to hear more about your work. You're doing very important work in Denmark, trying to bring the attention of the situation with the immigration in Denmark. As we know, and I'm sure we'll touch on this later, situation is far worse in Sweden, but that doesn't mean that it's ideal and good by any means in Denmark. But why don't you share with us whatever you feel is pertinent about yourself, how long you've been interested in these kinds of questions before we dive into the main issue that we're going to talk about here today.
Yes, well, first a little bit about myself. I'm a musician, and I'm working as an organist, and I'm working as a pianist, where I play at different parties, at company events. And I have three children together with my wife, and my wife is Swedish. She's actually from Kalmar. So that's why also I'm very interested in Swedish, how it goes with Sweden, how the development with immigration is in Sweden, because you never know, maybe my wife will move to Sweden one day. So I'm perhaps more interested in Sweden than most Danish people are. I began to be interested in immigration for many years ago, but I didn't do anything about it. I've never been interested in politics. But then 3 years ago, I began to go to the Danish statistical office, you could say, I think it's called. And I would try to see for myself, how is the situation? Because there are so many numbers flying around. And I've been studying math once in my background. So I thought, well, maybe it's not so difficult. Maybe I can do it by myself. So I took a while there and made some calculations. And then I've been trying to go into some ministers and politicians to present my work. And my work is not really difficult to understand. It's not deep. And the goal with my work is to make it simple for even left socialist people, people who are not interested in this question at all, to make it simple for them to see that something is actually going in the wrong direction.
Yeah. So what is the main, I guess, area of that or your concern? Is it the demographic situation? I mean, in Sweden right now, we are in a situation where basically we are going to become a minority if the current trends continue, right? We have low birth rates among the natives. We have an open door policy, right, which is, of course, very detrimental. I think it's a tragedy and a travesty for a people to lose their own country in this way. And also, of course, the fact that it's occurring outside of the democratic process, right? This is not something we get to vote on. There's no referendum on this. There's no just straight question that's been asked of the people if this is what we do. And I do believe that if this was put up to a referendum, let's say, I do believe that would be strongly rejected, the open-door policy, if you will. Yeah. Is it maybe the economy as well, the economic question of what it says? What's your main, is it all of the above when it comes to immigration? What's the main issue that you're concerned with?
Well, it is all of the above, but the main issue for me is to leave my country in a state that I would like to live in, because now I have three children, and I really would like them to have a good chance of having a good life, you could say, and not having to fight for every minute of existence. So I guess it's leaving the country in a fair state when I'm leaving this planet one time.
Yeah, you're talking about the fact that we need to be able to influence and have a say in the future. I mean, that's why I talk about these questions too. I have a young son, and he's growing up to be Swedish. He's going to live in Sweden the majority of his life, and so I'm very concerned about what it is that's happening and what kind of country he's going to grow up in, especially as a minority. And I fear maybe even a resented minority, right? Because I feel that the media, on top of all of this, is kind of whipping up a kind of a resentment against the natives, or that they are somehow worsening the situation or holding everyone else back and stuff like that. So it's almost like I don't know how much you know about what's been happening in South Africa, for example, but it's almost like I look at South Africa and see Is that a possible scenario for what might happen in Sweden one day in case we become a minority, right? Have you heard about that?
Yeah. I agree with you. That could very well be the scenario at one point.
And I mean, that's horrible. That's basically a state-sanctioned discrimination on a racial basis, right?
Yeah, and people in Denmark often talk about Sweden as an example of, oh, no, we don't want to go there. So in Denmark, people feel that we are actually doing a lot of good stuff against immigration. We are doing the right thing, and Sweden is doing the wrong thing.
Yeah.
But I think that we shouldn't feel so safe in Denmark. First of all, we are lying between Sweden and Germany. And Sweden and Germany, I think, is the two countries in Europe that has accepted most immigrants.
Yeah, you're sandwiched by two insane countries. Yeah.
So we should not be feeling so safe. And another thing is that we are not so far away from becoming a minority ourselves.
Yeah.
It's there are some studies about this, and some of them say that in 2050, that is 30 years from now on, Danish children would be a minority, ethnic Danish children. And in 2085, the whole country will be in a minority. The Danes will be in a minority.
Yeah. It's a disaster. It's unbelievable. I don't know any other historical example, even as bad as it was, let's say, during the Roman Empire, right? When or the Visigoths in Spain, right? When the Moors invaded or something, it was still a fight. It was still a different issue. Today, it's as I said, it's being done underneath or above. Maybe that's a better way of putting it. Above the heads of the people, of the masses, of the country, and we're not being asked about it. Now, tell us about. Before we move in and talk about, because you've initiated a very important campaign, shall we call it, in Denmark to try to raise awareness about these questions and also hold the politicians accountable. And we'll get to that in a minute here. But overall, I hear often anyway that Denmark is in a far better situation when it comes to discussing these issues than Sweden. Sweden is a repressive, politically correct climate. And I know that there was even a while back, there was a Danish comedian kind of making fun of this a little bit, right? He released some, I forget what the show was called, but it was kind of going around quite a bit. He was making fun of the Swedish police. They couldn't talk about who it was or how they looked or what gender they were or anything. It's just like total insanity. How would you compare Denmark with Sweden in terms of the political correctness?
Well, we think that Sweden is much more political correct than we are in Denmark. But when you begin to look into these questions about immigration and also the causes of why the immigration is looking like it is, then you begin to feel a lot of political correctness, and you begin to feel a lot of you become a dissident really quickly, because I cannot have something in the newspaper. What do you call that? I cannot write something and send it to the newspaper and then get it printed.
Yeah, a comment, not a commentary, but yeah, your editor, letters to the editor or something, right? Submissions, yeah.
Yeah, and I cannot do that. So, I mean, we have our political correctness as well. I mean, our borders goes at you cannot talk about that race exists. That's no go, no way. Not even the Danish party, you know, the
Danskernes Parti.
Exactly. That's another one actually. That's a party that didn't actually make it. But I'm talking about Dansk Folkeparti, which is the same as Sverige Demokraterne.
Ah, okay. Right. Yeah. Sweden Democrats.
And I was talking to one of their leaders, and he said, when I talked about an example of somebody from Somalia. There's a video going. Is that
so? This is the I'm running that in the background, some B-roll here, so people can check out the comedy here, because that's kind of funny. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to this minister, and then I was mentioning an example about people from Somalia, and I said something about, well, imagine people from Somalia if there was a lot of white people coming down there and trying to be integrated, and suddenly it was half white, half black. making the point that it's not nice to become a minority, not even for Somalis. But then he said, no, 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 we are not going to talk about color at all. So
yeah,
I have to stop my example there.
I would say it's the same with the Sweden Democrats. They're very, they're very tame. They're very. I don't think how they're addressing the issues is strong enough. It's good that they're there, and I do support the measures that they have and what they want to do and everything else. But I agree with you. It's very, it's so rigid, and it's a climate where people are terrified of just, you know, stepping over bounds or saying something which is not politically correct or whatever. I think race exists. I think it's a reality. I think we can visually see those differences. Why shouldn't we be able to talk about it? What's so dangerous about that, right?
Exactly. And one of the things that my next project is to go in and talk to these people and make a debate about if we are going to have multiculture and have more of it, we should at least study a lot. What does it mean when we become a minority? What does it mean when we become more multicultural? And we need to look at all the bad things as well. So bad things that is not nice to look at, as for example race, and for example, what does it do? You know, some countries have low IQ averages. Doesn't mean that everybody has a low IQ, but in average, the people from there, from Somalia, for example, they have a low IQ. And what does it mean when they come to Denmark? Is it possible to educate them out of IQ, low IQ? Is it possible that their children will have a very high IQ because they suddenly live in Denmark? And all these questions should be sorted out and should be debated a lot, even though they're not nice to talk about. Because we're talking about the future generation, we're talking about our children, and we cannot hide our heads and say that this is not nice to talk about. No, because it's very important that we turn every stone and see what is going to happen with this. And we need to have as much information as possible on the table. And race and IQ is one of them, just.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think it's a travesty to avoid trends and things. I mean, in other parts of the tasks that the government is involved in, it all revolves around that, predicting the state of the roads in 5 years from now, how things are going to be when it comes to education, how many schools we're going to need, measurements of, I mean, that's all they do, right? It's just statistics, trends, you know, connecting the dots in terms of where this is going. And so why do you think that these questions are just totally off limit when you think that a country which is involved in demographically replacing itself is avoiding the very issues of the policy that they have implemented?
Well, I think it's a good question and a difficult question why it is like that. But I'm sure that the media has their part of the answer and the responsibility, because there are many people in Denmark who actually want to talk about these things, but I can see from my own experience that when I try to write something and send it to a newspaper column, I don't get through. So the people think that the debate is about a certain, we could call it the Overton window. I know that's the expression.
Yeah.
Meaning the window in which... meaning what we are allowed to debate in this time. And I think the media can decide what we're allowed to debate. So I think they have a very, very big responsibility why we are not talking about these really simple things. And politicians, they could actually study these things. But they want to follow the media. They don't want to go off track too much from the media debate. So I think that's one of the problems, the media.
Yeah, absolutely. How's the alternative media in Denmark? It is actually very strong in Sweden right now due to the reasons that they are refusing to touch on certain questions. And, of course, the more they avoid the reality and the more reality doesn't correspond with the picture that the media is putting out, a lot of Swedes are forced and willing and happy to go to sources which actually address the problems that they recognize and see in society. And right now, that's basically all the alternative sources. And I know that the mainstream media is trying to demonize these, both the individuals running these companies or websites. They're trying to portray how bad they are, evil or whatever. But as a trend, again, it shows that the alternative media is definitely winning in Sweden. The trends are, the mainstream is just collapsing, not totally, but very fast, actually, while the media is skyrocketing. How are things in Denmark on that front?
Well, we actually are looking up to you guys because we envy your organization in Sweden. You have very good media, like, for example, Red Eyes TV. We don't have anything like that, not the same standard, I would say. We have some internet newspapers like Snaphanen, Uriasposten.
That's right, I know Snaphanen, I know. Yep, that's a good source.
Yeah, Danes Blazer we also have.
Yep.
Like the Daily Stormer, something like that. So we have things that, and they are really well done. It's good work, but it's still it's not as organized as you are in Sweden. We don't have the Danish house as you have the Swedish house now. So, but again, we don't have, the problem is not as big in Denmark, and I think that's why people are still hasn't woken up to the problem.
Now, the issue with that is that the worse it gets, yes, the more people wake up and are willing to address the issue. And to some extent, that's just kind of what it is. It's always been like that. People didn't concern themselves with economy until the economy crashed. You know what I mean? On average, right? But but the negative side effect of that, of course, is that when it's so bad in a country, both demographically or whether it's a change in cultural values or let's say crime as a side effect of bringing in people which cannot integrate and adjust to the Nordic society, it's like, yes, okay, great, they're waking up when it's finally reaching their own doorstep, but the people who still live in their shielded communities and behind gates and walls and in their all-white or all-Nordic or all-Swedish or Danish neighborhoods, they won't notice as much, and they might still be on a level where they continue to propagate multiculturalism and that this is a wonderful thing. So the question is how to break that and how to raise enough awareness, as you're trying to do, and we'll get to that here shortly now, but just what have you, or how have you gone about thinking about that question of saying, hey, guys, you must look at this now, because in 20 years, when, yes, you might see visually that it's bad, whatever, where you are, It's by that time, it's almost too late, right? If we're a minority, how are we going to turn things around when we can't even turn it around when we're a majority in our countries?
Exactly. Well, I'm trying, when I'm talking to people, I'm trying to have some short sentences ready. Like, for example, do you know that the IQ level in Denmark is actually sinking very quickly, and that that some forecasts show that in 2060 the IQ level will be at 90 in average, which means that democracy is actually going to be difficult to uphold. Stuff like that I could say, but I must say that one of the big obstacles to have conversations and to really move people is that in my case, when I'm out and talking with people, I often have my wife with me. We are together with friends, or we are on a job, or we're actually working together. So she's a singer and I'm a pianist. And the problem is that my wife, even though she agrees with me that it wouldn't be nice to become a minority and that the development is not good in Denmark and in Sweden, she's more interested in making a good nest, you could say, or a good home for her children. And that means to make the daily work and the day work, not to interfere, not to make anything dangerous for them or for me. So she's actually asking me to not talk about these issues, to talk about other things. And only if somebody else brings up something like, isn't multicultural wonderful, then I can, you know, go forward with something and say, no, I don't think so, actually. Mm-hmm. And then they can ask me. And that's also a very good way to go, because if you dominate the discussion and just say all your stuff, people will not listen as much as if they are asking you questions.
Absolutely. They you tend to take over, and they... I think you got to adapt to their level, which is very important, right? You might have all this information, all the things you can do, but I think it's less is more, as they say. And just trying to, like, you know, steamroll people over with, like, all the studies and information and research and numbers. And it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, talk about what actually interests them, right? So hone in on that. What did they raise first? Well, maybe it was the schools or that the economy or something else, right? Crime or something, right? And hone in on that and discuss why it's getting worse, right? So that's a good tactic, I think.
Yeah. That's what I would do. And then some small, like, teasers, you could say. Like, for example, would you like to live in a country where you are a minority? Like, would you like Danish people to become a minority and live in that? And most people would say no. And then they will say, but that's not what's happening.
Yeah, right now. Right now it's not, but it's coming. That's the point.
It's coming, right. Yeah. But then you have an opportunity to talk about some deeper stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, so and on the, you raised the issue with your wife, which is interesting. And I would assume, I kind of assume that that's more, how do I put it, more common, again, more on general terms, that women are more concerned with maybe the short term or the immediate or you know, making sure that things are good now, whereas it's kind of the task of men to strategize, think ahead, what's coming tomorrow, plan for the future and stuff. So that could just be kind of a general trait that comes with the difference between the male and the female brain kind of thing. But tell us about your campaign now and what's been happening. We have a number of things to pull up here and talk about. So you're starting, I guess, website which is Landsförräderi, which translates to treason. It's not there yet, but it's going to come. Tell us about this and the campaign you're doing.
Yes. Well, in Denmark, we have the last 2 years, we have a new possibility, which is that the citizens can actually propose a bill. They can make a proposal, and they only need to be 4 people to do that. And the process is very easy. You just go into a website, and then you write your text, and then the government must accept what you have written and see if it's within the borders of the constitution. If it is like that, then it's accepted. And the next step is that you have half a year to collect 50,000 supporters. And 50,000 supporters has to go to the website and has to click on your proposal. And then they have to register. And that is actually also a difficult thing, because people, if it's controversial, people don't even dare to register. Even though registration is only used to make sure that they are voters, that they actually are allowed to vote in Denmark. So it's not that the registration is used to come and hit them in the head or get them in the night.
Unless they change the laws later. We got you on lists. No, I'm just joking. But see what you're saying. So they couldn't use, it's not like a petition where you can actually use a different name or something like that.
You have to put in we have something called an ECID, which you use for every public thing, so you can identify yourself. And that's, you have a key card with another numbers. Probably you have the same in Sweden. So you have to identify as you, so they can see you are a citizen with your personal number and everything. Not just a fake email.
Right.
Yeah. So that's it. That's the first stumbling block, that people are scared to do even that. I've seen some of the comments on the internet, and some of the people have said, that's really a nice suggestion and I would like to do it, but I won't do it because I like my job. I like my life. Stuff like that.
Is that if people do this, is that public then, so that people can see who signed?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No way. It's only the administration of the government who has a list. And of course, something can go wrong and the list can go into cyberspace somewhere.
Sure.
But
yeah,
I mean, I'm putting my head forward, and a lot of other people are putting their heads forward. And it's not like
Let's put that in.
It's not like we want to throw everybody out of the country right now, or we want to kill everybody.
Right. Gas,
or anything like that.
This is what they say to make it illegitimate, right? But that's not what you're talking about here.
Say that again?
Yeah, that they say those things or bring that up to make it illegitimate or make it seem that it's unreasonable or some or something like that. But that's not what you're saying that this is about.
No.
Controlling immigration, controlling the borders, controlling immigration, and stopping immigration. Is that the primary purpose?
Of the proposal?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, indirectly, you could say. But actually, no, because the purpose of this proposal is to shift the focus from saying that the immigrants are the ones that are the bad ones and the one we should fight. And I mean, okay, the immigrants, I don't want them in Denmark, but actually it's not their fault. No, the fault is actually the ones who are responsible are those who made the laws that enable this process to go on.
Or those that didn't enforce the laws also, by the way.
Because
there are laws about, you know, asylum seeking and things like this, but in many cases, like Sweden did, they just granted automatic citizenship to every Syrian, for example, right, that wanted to come. That might have been a law or whatever, but the point is it was something that was rewritten specifically for that scenario and situation, was passed very quickly, and then they don't enforce the border rules and laws that are there already. They just let people in, and that's actually breaking the law. They're illegal, many of them, right?
Well, when in Denmark, it's like in 1983, there was a law called the foreigner law.
Yeah, this one here. We don't have a translation of it here, but tell us about this one.
Now, this one is another thing. We'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The other one I forgot to send you, but you can Google it if you like.
Sure.
Udlændingeloven is called in Danish. UDL and the Danish A, if you have that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Loven. And the year was 1983.
Let's see if I can find that here.
And this law is actually what made it possible for immigrants, you could say asylum seekers, refugees, to not only have to be able to stay in Denmark, but also have the same civil rights as Danish people, meaning they can have support, they can everything for free if they cannot support themselves. I'm not an expert in what the law actually said, but everybody talks about this law as a real turning point in Denmark. This is what opened the gates to Denmark.
So this is for the American audience listening. This is like the 1965 Immigration Act when Lyndon B. Johnson, I think he signed it into law, right, to open the borders and starting to change the country demographically. This is similar, but it happened in 83 there. I think Sweden was around 75 or something like that, if I'm correct.
Might be. I also heard something about 1965 in Sweden, Torge Erlander, I think was the guy.
That's right. It's interesting because it does coincide with what happened in America, actually, very, very much. I think there was a step up in 1970, something like that, but I think you're right. I think it was actually the same year as the Hart-Celler Act was passed in America, yeah.
Yeah, and I also heard the term that Sweden actually decided to become multicultural.
That's right, yep.
But it was not the people of Sweden, the citizens, were not told about this.
Nope, exactly. They just went totally over our heads. In America, I know they said, well, don't worry. It's nothing's going to change. And it's, you know, you're not going to be demographically altered or it's all fine. It's just to help people, right? But look at where we are now. And we're at the same trends in Sweden, same trends in Denmark. So, okay, 1983, that's what happened. So what happened? It was the same situation, a few people that decided on this?
No, the situation was different. It was actually, there was a debate, and there was a lot of, funnily enough, a lot of non-governmental organizations fighting for the rights of refugees and asylum seekers. And one is called the Dansk Flygtningehjælp, the Danish refugee help, you could call it, which is heavily supported by the government, by the way. And the leader at that time, he is called Hans Gammeltoft Hansen, and he might be somebody you could actually call a traitor, and the court system must take a look at that if they agree with me. But I would call him a traitor because he worked very hard as a lobbyist.
Yeah, lobbyist, right?
Yeah, for this bill to be granted.
Passed.
Or what do you call it?
Passed.
Passed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of other people who wanted to make better conditions for refugees, which I can understand is a nice thing. But the problem is that it opened the gates totally.
Yeah.
So it was actually a debate. It was open, and many people were against it, actually also in the government. But I don't remember the circumstances exactly, but they had to say yes to it, even though they didn't like it.
Now, why was that? Any more details on that?
It might be to get something else passed.
Okay, so yeah.
Exactly.
What they usually do is that they package these bills in different capacities. So it's like if you want to have an increase in budget for XYZ or whatever it might be, they said, well, then we're also going to tack this on and we're going to pass this. It's a package deal usually, right? So that's how they reach, which is a very bad way actually of doing it, because then it's not issue by issue, right, that you solve things. It's just a compromise, like, okay, well, we'll pass this if you agree to that and this. And so that's very bad. Now, do you know where he was leaning on the political spectrum, this gentleman you mentioned?
I don't know, actually. I don't remember.
I would assume he's on the left or socialist or something.
Yeah, we have a party here in Denmark called Radikale Venstre, which is called in English the radical left. A funny name for them, because normally they look at themselves as something in the middle. So they have often been changing sides and been in governments on both sides on the spectrum.
Hmm.
But they're very, very immigrant friendly. So you couldn't call them a left party, but it's the worst immigrant friendly party we have in Denmark, I would say.
Right. But he was not from that that party, then, as far as you know.
No, I don't know, but he might be from that. If you look him up, you could see that, but we don't want to waste time with
that. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so anyway, that passed, that law, and then, so what you're doing is basically bringing attention to this issue, what has been done to the Danish people. Is that treason? Could it classify as treason, right?
Exactly, and there are traitors within that the treason.
Now, this goes back to what I showed earlier there, and we can talk about that now maybe then. Under the occupation by the German National Socialists in Denmark, there were some people cooperating. And there was a law passed, consequently, in the wake of that, where they tried, I think, up to 100 people. Most of them got off, I believe. Some were put in jail for life or something like that. But what's interesting then about this is that this could be a way that you could use a law actually against those individuals, correct?
Exactly. Because one of the things... Often the issues is, can this law become retroactive, I think you call it. So working retroactively.
Retroactively, you're right.
Retroactively, yeah, thank you. And yes, it can, because here on the screen you have the example of that. After the Second World War, actually they made laws and they went after people who had broken the law, which was not there when they broke the law. So we will do the same. We can do the same. And actually, the Constitution of Denmark, the newly revised Constitution in 1953, there was a revision. And this revision left space open, you could say, for retroactive laws. And I think the reason why they actually left some space for that is that, or left that possibility open, is because they realized that in some cases you have the case that the traitors are actually sitting on the power. The traitors are making the rules. So you need to have some way to punish people retroactively.
Hmm.
And so it's only been used one time before in Denmark, and that was after the war. And we even had some death penalties. Some people were shot. But this could be the second time when we actually use this possibility.
Now, explain this situation a little bit to us and how you see this, because I would argue it would have to be proven in court or something like that, obviously. I would assume that it would be just a trial or something, but we have a lot of people in various countries around the West or the Western world in general that are working together with international organizations, for example. In some cases, they are part of international organizations. I know that there are a few handful examples and that people have been caught, that they're getting kickbacks, they're actually getting money from organizations. Maybe a little bit harder to prove, but I think if there were investigations, maybe more could be done. But how would you present the case for this in terms of how you would, I guess, go after people? I bring up the kind of international aspect because saying if you have politicians that are part of other groups internationally or NGOs or whatever it might be, that they're operating together with foreign entities. And the fact that they might even just be influenced by these organizations and they don't put the people of the country that they're supposed to represent first. But how would you approach this?
Well, I think that all these organizations, they should also be looked at by, let's say, a future ministry. We make a new ministry that actually cleans up this mess. And they should also look at these organizations that you are talking about, these people who have worked for NGOs and have worked abroad. Maybe they should not go to jail for a lifetime, but maybe it's they could pay back what they have earned. If they earned money for bringing refugees to Denmark, for making them settle in Denmark, then you could make them actually pay back those money. And that's what happened after the war, that not everybody was shot, of course, but some people were made to pay back money they had earned from the Germans. So it's a whole spectrum of ways to, you could say, punish people for this.
Right, and so also, of course, the law exists, so I'm not there to say whether Denmark should apply the law or not, but just to kind of set the record straight, you're not bringing this up because, like, you want to shoot these politicians, right? it's the fact that, you know, that should be clarified because that might be used against you that way. Well, he's threatening politicians now, or, you know, something ridiculous like that. You're no. Simply talking about being held accountable, and whatever measure, I guess, the country or the courts that deal with this see whatever way that they see fit of dealing with this, that's up to them to decide. But you're saying here's a reference to a law where something like this happened. They worked together with a foreign entity. They were doing things, you know, backhanded against the people. They were doing various things, and this could be used in other situations. That's what you're saying.
Yes, and maybe we actually owe listeners to talk a little bit about the proposal, because I don't think we ever explained what's in the proposal, actually.
Yeah, no, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, because the thing is that we in Denmark have a penal law. It's a lot of paragraphs and a lot of chapters. And this proposal goes to chapter 12 of this penal law. And chapter 12 is about treason, treason of the country. And on the screen you can see the word landsforræderi, and that's the word, the key word here. And there's also the word modernized, and that means that we actually have a law against treason, but the problem with the law is that there's nothing about this new situation where the traitors are actually helping groups of people to come inside Denmark. Normally it's about, before this time, it was about enemies coming from outside the border and people in Denmark helping these enemies to take hold of Denmark, to win over Denmark. But the new situation is that the enemy has been helped inside Denmark, and there's a lot of people who has made this possible. So we want to modernize this chapter of the penal law. And the law is already existent, and there are penalties from like a few months up to 16 years of prison. And we want to keep those, this spectrum of penalties, and do nothing about those. So we are just adapting the law to the the time we are living in.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So obviously here is, and it's not really a petition, is it? That's not how you would translate this. Is it a little bit of a different thing, which maybe most countries don't have? Unless I'm missing that, but you set it up, right? You started this 13th of February this year, and it goes all the way to 12th of August. So it's 6 months. And as you said, you needed 50,000 signatures or people that are backing this proposal, correct?
Yeah. And when that happens, if that happens, then the government, the parliament will or can take it up as a suggestion, as a proposal. They are not forced. They are not forced to do it. Actually, we have some examples that it's not very many proposals who has made it to 50,000 supporters.
Yeah, yeah.
But a few has done that, and one of them that is interesting was circumcision. There was a proposal.
That's right.
Yeah, and it made it all the way, and actually, it also made it into the parliament. And there was a debate about it, but Minister of State, our Prime Minister, he took a lot of time to find people who would say no to this proposal, because he was afraid that it would harm the trade, Danish trade in Muslim countries, for example. So it was a consideration like that.
Say that again. I'm not sure I'm following you.
Okay.
It could harm the Muslim population in Denmark. Was that why?
No, it would harm the trade with Muslim countries.
Oh, the trade. Okay, yeah, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, okay, they would check that. Or let's say maybe Israel or something like that, right, where also a lot of Jewish people are very, of course, adamant about circumcision. I know that Iceland passed a law as well about this, that they wanted to stop this. And actually, the Nordic countries have been at the forefront of ending, mutilation of little boys' genitals, also known as circumcision. And that's gotten flack from some parts of the international community. I think most people these days agree with it, but there is a faction which actually are fighting against that. But that's an interesting take. I haven't heard that that it would it would affect trades back to the economy, the monies again, right? The potential risk right there. But again, if that's what Denmark wants to do, make sure that their own population are not affected by that, then that should be their choice. But do you think there's anything else behind that though?
The whole Jewish community of the world, but also of Denmark, were really, on their marks and writing a lot in a lot of newspapers and a lot of debate. And they were, it was a really hard tone they had about how could we ever think about, such a law in Denmark.
Yeah, because they take it as then it's not religious freedom anymore, right? That's what they do or say.
That's one of the arguments.
Well, interesting. Okay, so let's clarify this too for people. 50,000 doesn't sound like that much, but again, you have to be aware that Denmark is at this point 5.7 million. So what is that, about 1%? My math is, you're the mathematician. Tell me how much that is.
I'm calculating. Yeah, that's 1%.
1%. There we go. Kitching. Okay, so that's that's still a pretty, that's quite a lot. I mean, people, first of all, need to be politically interested. They need to hear about it. They need to be willing to sign it. And then, as you said, there is that potential pressure of social ostracization when you actually do something like this, although your name is not supposed to be public, right?
Yeah. And that's also what's happening on the media, social media, that people are not so keen to share this thing.
Yeah, no one brings attention to it.
Yeah, exactly. It's difficult to get the word out.
Yeah.
Simply.
Yeah. And that's, of course, what we're doing here today, try to raise awareness so that Kim's campaign can get more exposure and that you guys out there, you Danes, go and sign this immediately so that something can be done to start gaining control back of Denmark again. I think also there's a valuable lesson to, if this is done in one country, it would effectively, although, sure, other countries might not have these specific laws that you mentioned and whatnot, but it might show the way or kind of send a message to the international community overall that there are countries that are interested in making sure that politicians actually are held accountable for the decisions that they do that affects the population negatively, which they're supposed to represent.
And that's a very important point, because let's say we get 50,000 supporters. That would be great. Let's say that the law even passes. And then, you know, other countries in Europe and the world will actually look at Denmark and say, wow, maybe. Some will say, wow, and say, is this possible? But let's say that it's not going to happen, that even though we get 50,000 supporters, nobody in the parliament will actually take this proposal through the parliament. So that nothing is going to happen. Well, even then, the main purpose of this proposition is actually to have a debate about this, to begin to talk about treason as something that is actually happening, going on.
And raising awareness of this issue that we talked about too, with population replacement and what agenda or who the politicians are actually serving, if they're serving a global interest as opposed to the national interest, right? Because I think it would be as valuable as an information campaign as it would be. And even if the papers start writing about this negatively, that, oh, here's a guy that want to try politicians for treason because they help refugees, which we know is a kind of a front. Well, we could talk about that, and I want to get your opinion, what you think, why they're doing this. But often we hear that, well, we're just helping people. What's wrong with you? You don't want to want to help people. And that's not what you're saying either. You're saying that if we don't watch our backs, we will be turning into a minority. And that's not helping people. That's doing a disservice to the Danes. Now you've prioritized other people and their concerns over your own people's well-being.
Exactly. And that brings us back to the Second World War, because many people were actually, what do you call that? The government from 1940 to 1942 or so, or later than that, the government actually told people to help the Germans. And there was some sabotage, but the government were really hard on that. They found the people and they punished them. So the government was working together with the Germans. Then funnily enough, after the war, those same people, they were punished. Those same people who were told to, in some cases, even go to war with German soldiers. Those people who went to war, they were punished after the war as traitors. Now, the situation today is that we have a lot of people who do what the main politics are, to help refugees and to integrate people. And so they are doing what they think is the good thing to do.
What was it? Let me ask you, was it the same? The political party had changed at that point, right after the war, because it couldn't have been a scenario where the politicians themselves instituted a law which they would be themselves negatively affected by, right? Something had it changed, it flipped, right? Or what happened after the war?
I'm not so good at that, but I think that the system actually was intact after the war. I'm not sure.
Hmm.
So there wasn't that's one of the problems then, that the ones who were punished were not the politicians and the leaders.
Right.
It was the people that the politician had told to do something.
Ah. Yeah.
And that's really rotten, right?
Yeah.
That's not right.
Nope.
But our proposition goes after the leaders as well.
Which is, of course, raises that interesting questions that you would assume that every single leader would try to stop something like this so they wouldn't have to take consequences of some of the things that they've done. So how
exactly.
How work around that? What needs to be done to because what politician anywhere would do something which negative would affect them, right?
No, but that's why when I talk to people, I say that, yeah, you're right. Who would actually pass that law that actually is going to punish themselves?
Yeah.
And I say, no, but maybe not this time. It's not going to happen now, I'm sure, but it will happen sometime. And now we're beginning the discussion and the debate about what is treason. And we're beginning to understand what it is, because we don't actually, at this point, we don't understand that treason is going on.
Exactly. Yeah. And there was something I was thinking about there. But that shows, that's right, that shows then that what they're doing is that it exposes as well that they are not able to be held accountable, that something is actually rotten within the system. Because if they do something bad, it's up to them to pass the laws, right? That doesn't make sense. It should be up to the people. to pass those laws and say, actually, this, because otherwise, and of course, this is why countries have violent revolutions and coup d'etats and things like this, because you have a regime in power which basically does things that are so bad to the people, but they would never institute a law or do something which changes things. So you have a violent overthrow as a consequence. And although we're seemingly in a situation where we have democracy and it's the people that rules and they decide, blah, 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 that's kind of just a facade at this point, where we don't really have a say because there's no way for us to really institute changes that holds these politicians accountable, right?
That's what you discover when you work with stuff like this.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as you're mainstream, you think that the system works. But then when you try to do something like this, you understand quickly that, no, it's not a real democracy because you don't have a say. You can't even get through to newspapers. And that's also one of the people that we are going to make accountable for this. That's the newspapers. Actually, I also sent you one of my answers, one of my articles about this, which brings up another important point, is that the newspapers has not been loyal to the Danish people.
Is it this one you're talking about?
No, it's the other one. It's a Word document, I think.
Okay, let me see if I can pull that up here. This one, was it this is the press release, actually. I'll see if I can find that. Do go on, I'll pull it up, yeah.
Well, it's because there was actually a reaction in a mainstream newspaper 1 week ago where a foreign editor in one of our radio channels, one of our government-supported radio channels in Denmark called Radio 427, Radio 24/7, yeah, that's exactly the one. And she said, the head title there is when you're accused of treason.
Yeah.
Exactly. And she complained that it was okay that people called her a slut or really bad words, called her ugly or something like that, but to call her a traitor. Now, then that was something that was really bad. She didn't like that, she said in the article here.
Does she name you, or was this other people that brought this up?
No, she doesn't name me. I mean, we have been sending out a lot of press releases.
Yeah.
And I guess she has gotten one, and that's why she feels angry now.
Right.
We haven't called her directly traitor. But we have sent a press release about the subject.
Right. And so she's one of these journalists that have kind of undermined the situation in Denmark and propagated the population replacement, or how is she tied into this?
Well, I don't know so much about it, but I Googled her and I found a Twitter account called We Are All
We're all Danish. Nutty people in Sweden too. They think that's the magical soil theory, right? You just once you enter into over a border, you just become Danish, right? But let's put the simple opposite situation in out there for people, for newcomers, obviously, they might be tuning in or detractors or something like that. If we as Scandinavians would go to Thailand or something. And even if we get a Thai passport, no one would ever consider us to be Thai, right? No one would ever consider us to be Angolan if we went to that country in Africa, or if we went to China, we'd never be considered Chinese, right? Let's just face that. But other people that come to our countries are immediately almost supposed to be of our national origin. They're almost belonging. No one, I guess, is trying to claim that they belong to us racially or as an ethnicity. But since those things are not brought up, it's just about the passport that you have or whatever your papers say, right?
Yeah, exactly. Was that a question?
No, not really. just a comment on the absurdity of the situation, that it's a double standard, right? That when we do something, or we try to do as Europeans or white people, whatever you prefer, to do something similar to what many people that are coming to our country does, then we would be laughed at, scoffed at, effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess if I was, I moved to China, then even after three generations of making white children, I would still be looked at as somebody who's not Chinese.
Hell, I know areas in America where the Chinese population is so big. I forget. I think it was California somewhere. They have their own areas and they have their own markets and everything. And I remember two Chinese-speaking Anglos came into the territory, and the Chinese people in America started calling them foreigners in Chinese. That's how bad it is in some areas in the West, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so, okay, go ahead. If there's more to this here, please go ahead.
No, there was not more to that. I just want to continue with the thing on the screen.
Yeah, go ahead.
So she made this article, and she's allowed a lot of space there. I think it's something called, something that you have a lot of words there, which is difficult to be allowed to get so many words into the newspaper. So the newspaper actually thinks it's all right to let her speak out her mind because she feels annoyed about this. So it's very important that she has a lot of space in the newspaper.
Yeah, they gave her three verticals right there. It's a whole page, basically. Yeah, exactly. But where's your opinion piece? What paper is this? Do you recall?
Yeah, this is one of the biggest papers in Denmark called Berlingske.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is a right-wing paper.
Ouch. Okay, yeah. That's how bad it is. That's when you know that the agenda of not ensuring the situation is the best and ultimate for the Danish people is in full swing when everyone across the political spectrum is moving in the same direction. Then there's no dissent, no opposition, effectively.
Exactly, yeah. That's how it is right now in Denmark.
Yeah, same in Sweden and same in many Western countries. Let's recognize that it's kind of a blueprint, really, which has been exported to most of the Western countries. We do have some opposition in Eastern Europe, and again, some countries might be 10, 15 years behind on this development, but let's be honest, it's happening all over the West, Kim.
Yeah, that's true. There's a little difference in Denmark, and that is that the Social Democrats has actually, a few years ago, changed their cause. So that now they are against immigration, actually. They're not violently against it. So they want to still keep our international, agreements. So we still need to take some refugees, but they have actually agreed to a paradigm shift a few weeks ago. I don't know if you heard about that.
I did not. Shift. That's interesting. Nope. What do they pivot or hinge that on? Is it the workers, the Danish workers?
Yeah, the Social Democrats in Denmark.
Right, but are they saying in order we need to do what's best for the Danish workers? Is that how they're kind of pitching this? Or?
Yeah, I think you're right. That's the reason why they are concerned about the situation now.
Great. Well, I'll take anything I get. I don't care what party they are, as long as they're thinking of the people first, you know?
Exactly. And they've made this paradigm shift now together with conservatives. And the paradigm shift is that now we should not try to integrate people coming here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We should do what we can to send them home when the conditions are right for that. So we're not going to spend money on integrating them, which is actually a big step, I would say.
Yeah, because I don't understand, Kim. Let's talk about that a little bit when it comes to repatriation and this aspect that a lot of people, they have come to the Nordic countries and Germany and England and America too, because they're fleeing some kind of conditions, right? And I know that legally there's different categories that we're talking about. Refugees, then we have asylum seekers, then we have immigrants, you know, there's different, you know, and it's all under different legal, headings or whatever you want to call it. But ultimately, usually the situation is the same. They're fleeing from war, they're fleeing from violence, or they're fleeing from like just bad economic conditions or that they can. The doors are open and they just, why not? I can go to Sweden, I can live there, or I have some relatives that live there, so maybe I want to go there. It's just, they can, so they do it, right?
Exactly, yeah.
But in most cases, that's because the situation, as they see it, is more favorable to them in a foreign country than in their own country. You would think that sane politicians and anybody would take a position that if things improve in their own country, then why wouldn't they want to go back and be in their own country? I take the position, why wouldn't they want to stay and fight in their own country? Even if it's as bad as being a war. In Syria, for example, I've been amazed to see how many men and even young men were willing to, pitch their tent in Sweden, leave the women and children behind, right? Because most of them that came in were men, and they're not staying and fighting. Like, what's going on with that? And I would assume that all of those people would be much happier in their own country with their own people, that where they understand the culture, they're familiar with the geography, with the weather, with the terrain, with customs, with religion, with all those aspects. It's just, it's so complicated to uproot people from their own, cultural homeland, put them in a foreign country, and then expect them to, either integrate, which was the prior plan, but as you said, most countries are giving up on that now, and they're asking them just to basically set up colonies inside existing Western countries.
Yeah, that's the situation. Yeah, and you can see in Estonia and Lithuania, for example, Latvia, you don't have a lot of refugees. And the reason for that is that they don't get any money there. So even though I guess they are allowed to come there and seek asylum, they know where the good places are. So of course they are coming for the money, and also they flee through 20 countries sometimes to get to Denmark or Sweden. So,
and isn't that illegal too? I don't know how aware you are of the UNCHR, the refugee, or is it the Human Rights Commission or something? I forget what it stands for, but they're the ones that are looking after the rules and the laws when it comes to refugees and migrants. And as far as I understand the rules, you're actually supposed to go to the nearest country to you that is at peace and stay there. That's actually the law.
Yeah. I think they call it the Dublin something.
Oh, was it an agreement, the Dublin Agreement or something? It was passed there?
Yeah, you should go to the first border in Europe. You should stay, when you've crossed the first border into Europe, you should stay there until your case has been settled.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's why Italy don't like that law so much, I guess.
Yeah, because it would hit them first. Well, in many cases, they go to Turkey. Right, and if we're talking about Syria, there's many countries now, obviously, but even or let's say the human traffickers, the smugglers, right? They're bringing people from Libya. Libya collapsed, of course, after Gaddafi was taken out, and pretty much maimed and molested, in the streets of Libya. He was killed, and after that point, Libya became a gateway for most people that are coming from sub-Saharan Africa and Northern Africa, going into Europe. And, they're traffickers, they're human smugglers, and we even have ships, of course, in Europe, like the Doctors Without Borders, that are going and picking up people in the Mediterranean and dumping them in Greece or in Italy or even France. Many of them, as you said, they seek their way up to Sweden, to Germany, or to England.
Yeah. Yeah, so we are pretty stupid, actually. We are... I think we have been living in protected societies in Europe for so many years with social welfare and so on. So the people that are living right now in our time, they have never tried to fight for existence. They have never tried how hard, really hardship is, how hard times can feel like. And so they have this dream about how society should be and how the world should be, how we should help everybody. But they don't have any sense of danger, any sense that dangerous things can happen to them in their life. They are so sure about being able to go down to the grocery store and being able to buy food every day. They cannot imagine having problems in their life actually like that. So they are not on their guards anymore.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it, that they're so naive, and they don't understand that people are many people are self-serving. They just want to do what's best for them, right? And many people that come to our countries, they don't really care about the country that they're coming to or the people there. I mean, it has to be recognized that some of them, I understand. I mean, I understand that they want to flee from war, and I don't think it's effectful for us as Europeans to just be cold and cruel. In terms of the policy that we want to implement, I do believe. I think it was Frank Salter that talked about this. He studied genetics and things like this in down in Australia, and we've done quite a few shows with him. People can check them out in the archives. He's very good. I mean, he's talking about this from a point of view of genetic interest and these kinds of things. Very interesting on ethnicity, but and the value in that. But he argued that he said you're not going to win, at least right now as a Westerner, if you just say this kind of like that you kind of are cold and you don't have any heart and you don't want to help these people at all or whatever. And he might be right on that. I'm not sure. I know that people are increasingly, of course, fed up, and to a certain extent, the charity that we do have left, I think, is going to be, if this continues, is going to be squandered for the fact that people are going to get so sick and tired of this, that they're just not going, and I think many think this already, and I totally understand, don't get me wrong, I totally understand that they don't want to help whatsoever. But I think we can still have, we do help these countries too. We do a lot in aid to these people. And if there was refugee camps and similar things that were set up in areas that's much closer to them, I think a lot of people would still be willing to help them there where they are. And I think that's the extent of what our charity should be. And then when there's peaceful conditions in their countries, they should go back, right? So what I'm saying is, right now, I think we're developing a mentality which is far more harsher. And so be it then. I mean, this is being done to us, and I totally understand it. I totally understand that people are getting angry and they're getting upset. But in the long run, I think a lot of Westerners, they're very kind-hearted. They want to help. They want to do what's right, and that's ultimately is a good trait. But I think that energy and that desire is diminishing when it comes to helping others, and hopefully that's going to be increasing when it comes to our own population, where we start saying, well, what's good for us? What kind of future is this going to be for our children? When are we going to start taking our own side and saying, there's no situation where you start helping other people first and your own house collapses and crumbles and you have nowhere to live. That's just not the reality, Kim.
No, exactly. And and I think also for the immigrants and the foreigners coming to our countries, it's very important that they don't stay, because it wouldn't be good for them to have a civil war, for example, either, or a society that breaks down where everybody fights each other. So it's bad for the immigrants, and it's bad for us to have them here. And even the immigrants that are functioning well, like who have become doctors or have had a good education in Denmark now, and they say, what about them? Yeah, but their home countries need them really much, because they can do something about the situation at home, because now they have a lot of experience from our country and they have an education.
Exactly. So, it's a brain drain, and that's a very good point. It's been brought up many times. There's an excellent video. I might tack it on to the end of this interview that we do today, so watch out for it. It's the bubblegum video. I don't know if you've seen that. He goes through, it's an American professor. He's making an example out of bubblegums. Each bubblegum represents like 50,000 refugees or migrants or something like that. And he fills up all these containers and canisters and saying how many, like, this is how many poor people there are in the world. This is how many that would like to, you know, immigrate to. I think he's just talking about America, but it could be applied to any country. And he's juxtaposing the amount of immigrants that America is taking in per year as opposed to how many are born each year and what happens when the best in a country flees that country and goes to the West, right? So just as you say, and it's a very good video. So watch it. It's coming at the end here. But it's the doctors and again, how many really a percentage of those are coming? Are that? I mean, I think it's pretty few at this stage anyway. But the capable people are meant, they need to stay and help their countrymen. It's a betrayal to their own people, and the people in that country will be far worse off because of the fact that the most capable and able and maybe even financially stable individuals have just uprooted and left, right? It's unfair.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I can see you have something on the screen there.
Yeah, can you tell us about this? You sent this to me, and this is about the demographic situation. Is that correct?
Yes, and the reason why I'm looking, it's because the way I'm looking at immigration on this sheet here is that I'm looking at what we produce every year of new people in Denmark. And by that, I mean childbirth, and I mean immigration in the form of either asylum seekers coming here and often they are staying here, and also family reunions. So what this chart shows from 2007 to 2017 is that if you look at how many people are born every year and see which of those are ethnic Danes and which are born from immigrants, and then you look at that together with who are family reunited, that is coming as grown-ups or as children, and who are seeking asylum, and looking at all these numbers, then you can see in the bottom, you can see all these percentages. You can see that 34% of the new Danes, you could say, every year, are not ethnic Danes. Only 66% are ethnic Danes, oof, born by ethnic Danish women.
Look at how fast this it changes there too. 10 years, yeah, from 21% to 34%. That's incredible.
And look at 2015. What happened there?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the peak of the refugee crisis, right?
Yeah.
As well.
And it's not stopping there, actually, because I have not taken, for example, people who come here to work or to study, and maybe half of them, or at least a good amount of them, stay in Denmark also. And I know they are not from the third world countries often. They are from Poland, maybe.
Right.
But still, it's still not Danish people.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true. I mean, far better, of course, with Western and European immigrants. Absolutely. But at the same time, why? I mean, things are good in Poland now. I mean, I know that there's a lot of people that have uprooted and left for England, for example. And of course, I get that there was economically worse in Poland and they left to England to get jobs and blah, blah, blah. But it's like Poland is like a nationalistic country now. Things are like going great. It's one of the safest countries in Europe now, by the way, also, yeah, which is very interesting. And that's not because Poland is much more safer. It's because all the other countries became less safe. You know, so they rose on the chart. And of course, it's a great country. Yeah. I'm not trying to put it down or anything like that, but I'm just saying it's also easy. One thing that annoys me with Poland and the Polish situation is that it's very easy for Poland to have turned into a nationalist country when those who are maybe less nationalistic inclined, meaning those who are willing to uproot and leave, goes to another country. So those that are left in Poland obviously would be the more nationalistic ones, right? So
yeah.
I just think that this Kalergi plan, as they call it, the mixing up of everything and it's just spreading out of the map. I just think it's horrible because it's ending diversity and it's ending the different cultural traits that we have, Kim.
Yeah, because see, Poland is also a country that has been through a lot of hardship.
Yep, that's true.
And they just came out of, bad conditions, and it's beginning to grow for them now. So they know, they are on their guards. They still know how it feels when things are not working that well. And I think that's why the Eastern Europe is actually more against immigration, because they have tried, like Hungary, have tried a lot of problems with this stuff.
Yeah.
And we don't know because we have been living protected for so many years. Another thing about this sheet I would like to say is that the reason why it's important to look at what do we produce every year is because this is what is going to form the demography of tomorrow.
That's right. Yeah, when these people grow
20
up.
20 years from now.
Yeah.
So if we have this, like 34%, is what is happening right now every year, then that is going to be what we have in the whole country in like 20, 30 years maybe.
And I know that Denmark has had some campaigns. I remember there was a state-sponsored campaign. I think this is a year, maybe 2 years ago, Do It for Denmark. It was kind of funny. It was like a video that they released. And that's good. I mean, look at what Hungary, Russia, Italy is doing. Italy is handing out free land on the countryside to the families that have more than three kids. Hungary, I think it was it five kids? They started to pay off mortgages or something like that. Or maybe I'm confusing that with Russia. It was a similar plan, I think, in Hungary.
I think it was four kids in Hungary. If you have four kids,
that's right,
then you could be tax-free for the rest of your life.
Wow. I mean, that's...
three
that's...
kids, you could have a big car with nine seats. And you couldn't have the whole car, but I think you would get a certain amount paid for that.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So there are things that politicians could do and implement too.
Yeah, but it works for Hungary because they are still a homogenous country.
Right.
But it wouldn't work for Sweden, for example.
Not
because
now.
Because then you would have to say, this law only works for ethnic Swedish people.
Yeah, well,
and then you would have a racist outcry.
Yeah, well, maybe we need to have some outcry then, you know? Laws are passed and they're kvetching all the time about things, you know, that's just what it is. I think that, you know, obviously they need to pass a law to make sure that the existing population, it's amazing to me that the left and the cultural Marxists that have initiated this plan of population replacement. And yes, today it's totally lined up with the bankers and the international community, the capitalist forces in the world, the international forces. They're equally interested in this because it benefits them. More people means more products sold. It means, you know, they don't care where the money comes from. If people get welfare or whatever it is, as long as they're spending on these companies, they're happy with it. They can also push down the wages, we should mention, a lot of these companies in the countries that they operate. Cheap labor, right? You can bypass these old pesky workers' laws and things like that. So there's a unification between the capitalist forces and the socialist or neo-Marxist forces, I think, in the world as well. We can just refer to them collectively as globalists, right? They're globalists, all of them. They don't care about nations anymore. And, you know, what was I going with this? What's noteworthy is that's right. Why is it so difficult for a country to? Well, I'm saying that the globalist forces have pushed it so far that it's supposedly immoral for a country to stand up for its own population. And when I say its own population, I mean those that belong to the country ethnically or have a genetic tie to the country in some capacity. Even if that's 25% or 50% or whatever, and just say, well, all these other people that are coming in, they're temporarily housed in this country. They're visitors that they're getting to stay because we're helping them because we're charitable. But why should they be allowed to vote? I'm serious about that. Why should they be allowed to vote when they don't belong to the country? If they've entered into the country as asylum seekers or migrants, they've entered in under a different legal framework than those who are actually citizens and born in the country, right? And so they should be treated differently. And
that's
we know
why the system is actually killing us. The democracy system is slowly killing us because I agree with you. Why should they be allowed to vote? No, they shouldn't be allowed to do that. But another thing is that think about young people. Think about Brexit. Who is it that didn't want to have Brexit? That was the young people.
Yeah.
And young people are so easy to work with their minds. It's so easy for the media to work with young people's minds. I mean, how much did you know when you were 20 years old? So should young people, like up to 25 years old, should they be allowed to vote also? Because they are actually making it more difficult for us, I think, sometimes to turn things around.
Yeah, they're even proposing to take the age limit down. I've heard of voting, right? Let's allow the 16-year-olds in, or why not the 15-year-olds, right? And as you say, it's because usually those individuals are more prone and they're more prone to be left in their opinions because let's face it, they don't know that much yet. And as you get older, and especially when you have children, you're more prone to become conservative. Why? Because you're not just thinking about the fleeting moment of what it feels good for you to have at this point. You're thinking of the future, right? What is going to go? What kind of world is it going to be for our children? There's also this interesting aspect. I'm sure you've heard of it, but many of the European leaders right now that are destroying the West with their policies are actually childless, right? There's very few of them. And it basically means why, and I'm serious about this, why should we have leaders which has nothing invested in the future? I mean, genetically now, or like the fact that they have spawn and they have people coming, right? They can just think of whatever is good for them politically at that moment. And if the winds blow in a certain direction, they use, oh, of course, yeah, we'll do that, no problem. They make money, they get reelected, but they don't think 20, 30, 40 years from now.
Exactly, yeah. But, I mean, what I want to say to people if they say that all these people you want to punish as traitors, many of them has actually done what they have done with a good heart. politicians from the left has really done this to make everybody in the world feel good. So should they really be punished? They did it in good faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, well, politics is not an ideological playground. It's not a place where you can have a fancy idea and try it out. No, it's a big responsibility to lead a country. And you have to examine everything. You have to look at all the possibilities for which causes you can choose for the country. And then you have to put everything on the table. Also race, as we talked about before, everything that looks bad also. You, without thinking about how many votes will I get or how many money will I earn, if you have the responsibility for a country, this is what you should do. And you shouldn't have like a big ideology behind you that you want to try out. If you have done that, like the left has done for a lot, then you have to take punishment. it's not because I think you're a bad person, but you had the responsibility and you didn't live up to it.
Yeah, and there's so many in that chain of command, too, that have failed. Advisors, economists, demographers, statisticians, everything along the way. But let's think about it this, too, and you're absolutely right, because, I mean, I think when I think of Sweden, it's a political laboratory. It's an experiment. It's a playground for these individuals that have an idea about what a globalized world would look like, right? Multiculturalism. It's wonderful. Yeah. It's going to be great. Look at how wonderful Sweden has turned out. Look at how great it is now compared to 20 years ago. It's a humanitarian superpower. That's right. Yeah. Exactly. We got to open your hearts, as our previous conservative Prime Minister Fredrik Reinfeldt said, right? And he even said in one of his speeches, it's going to be very difficult for you guys right now. You Swedes have to open your heart, but there basically is not going to be any money left because we're doing this, and you have to open your hearts, and you have to make sure that we help everyone else before we help you. But anyway, the reality is we're seeing the collapse of the country. Let's just face it. People try to pretend. They say it's not that bad, blah, blah, blah. It's circling the drain. It's going into the toilet, basically. We're slowly seeing effects of this. You're not going to see all these changes overnight. A country is a big, it's a big ship of sorts, and steering it, you know, onto shallow waters and eventually, capsizing. That takes a while. It just doesn't happen right away. But if it was true, Kim, that they just did this because, oh, this is what they think. It's good, you know, that they want to help people, or they're good-hearted and all that stuff. Or it's a political experiment. They just want to try things out. If that was true, why is it then that opposing voices and those that simply are bringing to the forefront, bringing to the attention of people, the downsides of it, the negative consequences, and those that are putting two and two together and seeing where this is going in the future, why are they so vehemently put down? Demonized, their reputations is destroyed in the media. They're attacked violently in some cases by far left wing pressure groups. Right? There's so many issues along the way where you realize it's not just by happenstance or an accident that they just, well, let's just do what's good for the people. There's a whole system in place which is there to actively crush, effectively, dissenting voices and people who have a different opinion and view. And before you answer, adding on to that as well. We're talking about people in many cases that are not, as we clarified before, encouraging violence towards anybody. They're not saying that people should be punished. They're not, in many regards, saying that people should be kicked out of a country or they should be oppressed because they're a different ethnicity or race or anything like that. They're just trying to raise the awareness of saying we should politically stop what's happening. We should do something with our policy. We should halt the immigration policy. We should implement different laws. It's not about targeting specific individuals. It's just about changing the course of the country. So what would you say to that, of why we have that repressive environment that we do?
I would say again that I think it's the press has brainwashed people. And I mean it's a very hard word, very tough word to use. But actually, they are the ones who decide what people should think. Then together with media and television shows and so, that we also get from United States, Hollywood and so, when all media and all books that are published and newspapers and politicians say the same thing, then people begin to think the same thing. And they think that, and all the message from all these media and so on is that it's a racist not to want an African to come into your country. So also the children in their schoolwork, they, my child, my little daughter, she's 10 years now, I've watched her math books for a long time, and they have like 50, some pages have 50% foreigners on them.
To, it's amazing.
It's like, yeah, just to illustrate some mathematical point, they, you know, they have like 8 people and 4 of them are either African or Pakistani, you know, stuff like that. And the names in the text is like, Ali, he goes to the shop and buys something, like, you know, and but so it's like brainwashing, and it's a new reality they're trying to build. This, just like you had the Nya Sverige, yes, whatever it be called.
Yeah.
It was called Nya Sverige or something, that the old Swedish has to be integrated into the new Sweden now.
Yeah, it's just the way it's just the way it is, and it's funny too because many regards, you know, we're talking about the cultural takeover too of, or I call it, it's an occupation of the mind. It's about, it's even rewriting history in some cases, where you take historical characters and you change the ethnicity of them or the race to kind of send a message that this is how it always has been. There's never, I even hear people that are like denying that ethno states exists. Like, what is Iceland? What is Denmark? What is China, even, for that matter? Those are ethno-states. It's an ethnicity that dominates the country, and it's a state that's built for them. It's an ethno-state, right? And it's and it's never been something which is wrong or somehow that this country didn't replace itself immediately as soon as they found out. That was immoral that they didn't do that. But that's what we're in the process of doing now. And furthermore, I hear the argument all the time that, well, if we don't put little Ahmed or whatever, Ali, in the mathematics book, he will not feel included, right? So it's mean towards them, right? So their parents immigrated to the country, or maybe he came directly. He's not even born in the country. And so because of that, we as Swedes or Danes, we're supposed to uproot everything that we're doing and the society that we have built for our children just to accommodate them. When they made a conscious decision and choice to leave where they were to go to another country, you'd think that they would have the awareness where they realize, okay, we've done this voluntarily. We've entered into this country. We are visitors. We are foreigners. We weren't born here. We don't ultimately belong here. They've been very nice and kind to let us in, and they let us stay. But you know what the message should be? It should be, ultimately, let's let the Danes decide. If they want to have a tighter immigration law, it should be up to them. It shouldn't be up to the person that just arrived 5 minutes ago who got voter rights to say, you know what, I'm going to vote for the party that want to keep the borders open so we can replace these people. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that are wrong with this. But what I want to return to quickly, I imagine, is this issue of the replacement in the math books, as an example. Yeah. That we need to do it because they need to feel included, right? But what about our kids? What about when 80% of them are foreigners? What when 100% of them in these books are foreigners? When there's no one that looks like them or sounds like them or have their names or whatever, that we can be in a situation where we become a minority, where we don't have any representation anymore, and it's right when it's being done to us, but it's not right when it's being done to them, right? And the differences as well. We don't have a backup country to go to. There's nowhere else where we can go. They can still return back to their country. It's all full of their people. It's all full of them. They speak their language. Sure, the country might be in a disaster when it comes to the economic situation or war or whatever, but ultimately they have what every country is built and desires, which is a country that is for them and for their group alone. But we don't have that. We don't have a backup. Where are we supposed to go, right?
Yeah. Well, we can hope that if it breaks down everything, that they will leave, and then we can build it up again. But hopefully we can do something about it before that. And I think one of the things we can do to stop this brainwashing is to begin to use words like you just used, ethno-state, for example, like it's okay to be to be happy about your nation, to be nationalistic. And also this proposition that I've put forward is also a way to begin to put new words into the debate. So it's not only the left that decides what we should talk about, racist and all this, but we can actually talk about traitors also and treason.
Yeah.
And so that's my hope with this proposal.
Yeah.
It is to change this debate a bit. And I hope many people will help me in this endeavor. And already many people are doing that. You are helping me now. And a lot of people are out there spreading the news and writing stuff about it. And we are sending this press release to not only the press, not only the government and the parliament, but we are sending to all people who have been involved in creating a multicultural Denmark.
Mm.
And that is, for example, NGOs like Danish Refugee Help. And it's also all the mayors in Denmark. It's also all the, what do you call the council, the local councils, the communities there.
Yeah, the city council.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The city councils. It's also all the. We have a system in Denmark where we build cheap houses, cheap apartments that you can rent for not so much money. It's a very good idea, so that people who don't have so much money can actually have a nice place to live. But what happened then with all those apartments? They're filled up with immigrants.
Yeah.
Because
that's right.
They got in the front of line. Because they were poor and didn't have anything, so you are in line for 20 years sometimes for this flat.
It's insanity. But
they came in directly, and then they just got a flat right away.
It's like we're secondhand citizens in our own country.
Yeah.
Well, let's face it, Europeans, white people is the only group that you legally can discriminate against, right? And in this case, we're talking about the individual European countries, and we end up at the back of the queue. They tell us we're privileged and we have all these things supposedly, what is white privilege, whatever they call it, even in our countries now. Although that's an American phenomenon, it's the same everywhere in the West about these arguments, points that they come with. And basically, like you're putting our own teenagers and 20 something young adults in a state of arrested development where they can't move out of their parents' home, they can't ultimately maybe meet someone and create a family of their own because there's nowhere to live. It's expensive as hell. There's not enough apartments. We have the same issue, of course, in Sweden. And it's basically, I don't know, I can't help to feel that it's intentional, that it's like, this is what they want. I think we're dealing with people that want to destroy nationalism. And I think that the plan for them has been then to destroy the very glue that keeps nationalism or a nation together, and that's a homogenous population, right? So they deny us all the privileges that we're supposed to have, right? A privilege is basically something that's handed down to you. Think of your grandparents, right? Did they work to make sure that people coming from Afghanistan would be in a better position to get something for free in Denmark when they showed up at the door? No, they did it for you and for your children and for their grandchildren, to leave a nation, just what we started with, your desire to leave something to your kids, which is not only like adequate, but it's better than the situation that you had and that you grew up under. That's a healthy response. That's what every human being who has a self-perpetuating drive supposed to do.
Yeah, and that should be the new norm. That should be that we are... A proud man is something that you should look up to. It's not something that you should call a racist or a Nazist or something like that. A proud, strong man is something that we should tell our children, that our boys, what do you call it, our boys, that this is a good thing. This is something you should actually try to achieve, to become strong and to actually fight for where you live. Right now, we are producing soft men in school. They are all, the pedagogues are women in nursery and in a kindergarten. In school, most of them are women. So all our boys learn not to fight, not to be boys, not to play like boys. So what we have, we produce a lot of boys who look a bit like women, and who don't have the some of them, and then they don't have the power to actually change and go against the system.
Yeah, that's right.
They're following the system so much. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right, Kim. They're weakened, right? And they have no fighting spirit in them anymore. There's nothing there. And I just see all these aspects is a cocktail, a recipe for disaster. And that's the direction where it's going. I don't want to hold you too much longer. I know it's getting late over there as well. But there, let me know if there's something you'd like to round up on. There's a couple of articles, I think. Denmark has overall been a little better with attacking the issue of Islam, for example, than Sweden has, right? The debate is, of course, raging on alternative newspapers and outlets in Sweden, which is good, right? But it's not the only issue. It's not just about Islam. To me, it's so much more. It's about there seems to be a lot of people that are happy to be demographically swamped and turning into a minority, as long as it's not Muslims that are coming in or changing the values, right? And I'm not of that belief at all. I think that the greatest gift that we have in terms of the diversity is our own unique genetic traits. And for us to, even if there was the greatest, most talented people possible that came in, even if it was beneficial economically, there were, no, unlike this article, right, that's talking about the strict immigration laws is actually saving Denmark billions each year, right? They have a tighter immigration law. And so comparatively to Sweden, they're actually saving money. So end result, it means it's costly to have immigrants, right? Of course, we have all these economists that gives us these lies and say, actually, it's a boon to the economy and blah, blah, blah. No, it's not true because of articles like this that exposes that lie. So,
yeah, but not only this article, but we also, the Danish finance ministry has for 2 or 3 years now has done a big calculation about what does it cost to have foreigners. And if you look at non-Western foreigners, we are actually spending around 36 billion crowns every year. And this is the official number. But I read an article from Norway some years ago, and the government had made a similar calculation.
Yeah.
And there it costed more than 100 million Norwegian crowns. So I'm sure that the Danish calculation is not as it should be. I think there are some factors that haven't brought into. For example, building a new metro in Copenhagen is very expensive, and you can only do that if you expect to have more economy going with that.
Yeah.
But we invite a lot of people who are not, it's not a big probability that they will make a very great economy in Denmark.
No,
so
exactly.
We have invested a lot of money in a metro because we have all these people now, but they are not going to produce anything.
No.
And that's the same situation in Norway when they made this calculation. And we haven't, this number or this this idea is not included in the 36 billion. So it's probably much higher. So it's right, yeah, your article shows that we are going to save money, and we have actually made a calculation about how many money we are going to save.
Yeah, exactly. And it's I'm looking for a couple of other articles here. You guys have probably seen them. Germany had a similar thing about the refugees that were coming in. It was like one in like 200 or something was only employed, and it was like it's a disaster, right? So back to the point about that specific article and the overarching discussion that I was having there, that even if it was an economic boon, even if it was the people that came in was like objectively much better than Scandinavians or whatever, right? I still wouldn't want that, right? Because
that's
a
very good point.
Because it's ours. Because it's us. Because it belongs to us. It's our country. We make the choices. We make the decisions. And it's not about the economy. It's not about materialistic aspects to this. It's about the fact that of respecting sovereignty and the population of a country and their own sovereign decision of saying this is ours, this is how we want to move forward in the future. We have a right, it's a human right to decide our own destiny, not be steamrolled over by be they capitalist interests, bankers' interests, NGOs' interests, political politicians, their interests. There's so much here to kind of unpack and go into. But again, I want to keep it brief here towards the end. It's not an ideal situation. things are getting worse. It's getting more criminal because of the fact that we said they're not integrated into the society. They're not let into the job market. Many individuals that come in, they even enter in under the system overall. They stay illegally, which means they cannot get a job. They cannot get a driver's license. They cannot get all these normal things. So they sustain themselves on criminal activity, prostitution, drug sales, right? There's a lot of bad consequences of this. So our countries are turning into shitholes. Let's be honest about that. They're turning into shitholes. And I'm not saying that it's the fault of every single immigrant that came into the country or the aspiration that they had to have a better life for themselves. But the fact is they're bringing with them the conditions that they fled from in many regards. And now they're not only destroying their country by leaving and not fighting for it and making their country better. They're destroying ours and the very countries that was in a position to begin with to give aid to these countries, right? The whole mechanisms is being terminated and shut down of a successful Western world that had more to offer. And we were in a position to help these countries. That's over. That's done. That's where in the last years now of being in a situation where we can help these individuals. And then, as you said, that's the interesting question. What happens at that point, right? Who can rise out of those ashes? Because I think, unfortunately, and I don't want this. I want to try to avoid this. This is why we're talking about this. I don't want conflict. I don't want war. I don't want competition over resources or territory. But that's where I think we're heading towards. And that's why we're talking about this, because we want to avoid that, right?
And I think you're right about that a conflict or even a civil war could be a possibility. And if that comes, then it's going to be quite ugly. Because it's not only ethnic Danes or ethnic Swedes fighting immigrants. No, it's a very complicated picture because a lot of ethnic Swedes and Danes are actually helping the immigrants. So you're going to not know who is your enemy and who is your friend.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and they and you might say, oh, here's my brother or here's my sister, ethnically speaking, right? But they might be more interested in undermining that. There might be a self-hating Swede or Dane, right? There might be a Antifa member. They might want to stab you in the back just because you want to defend your own country and your own people, for example, right? So you're right. It could be a number of fifth columns and different groups that pops up and rises up to undermine the existing, be that the existing order or those that are trying to regain control and law and order again of a country, which is a decline and collapse. You're right.
And also then the military and the police. As you have done in Sweden, we in Denmark have tried to integrate a lot of our non-Western immigrants. And that means when this conflict breaks out, then there will be some people inside the system who can actually, you cannot trust the system anymore.
It's bad. It's really, really bad, you know. Couple of things I want to bring by you here. Denmark to build controversial German border fence. Now, this is interesting because they blamed the Boer initially, right? But I think it had something to do. It says here, the subheading says, Denmark is set to build a fence along the German border in a bid to keep out swine fever. Critics says it won't work, harms wildlife, and that is true, and I don't think we should harm wildlife. I agree with that. And maybe the only be a symbolic gesture to cater to farmers and anti-immigrant sentiments. Have you heard about this? Is there any anti-immigrant...
Oh, can you read that again?
Yeah, it says critics of this border here says that it won't work, it harms wildlife, and may only be a symbolic gesture to cater to farmers and anti-immigrant sentiments. Is that true?
Well, I haven't followed that, so I can't answer on that.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, we'll have to do
this. I have a funny anecdote about that. There was an article in one of the nationalist newspapers about this, and they called it Black Pigs Entering Denmark. talking a very, and they didn't hide that they meant immigrants when they talked about black pigs. So it was a pretty tough article, but I'm not sure about your question there.
All right. No, that's fine. Again, we'll have to see what happens there. But and again, I agree that with the wildlife thing, I think it is disastrous to just build a long fence and block out those things. What we should do is what we've always done, which is to have a border and enforce that border with patrol and surveillance. And you don't have to build a wall everywhere or whatever it is, right? You have to be just physically located there and keep an eye on people that are trying.
We should do things that are natural.
Of course.
That are natural instead of believing that we should find new ways all the time. No, we just have to look inside ourselves and feel what is natural.
Yep, You're right. Another one, Finland, to emphasize the point that we made earlier about repatriation, that some countries are involved in this now. Finland wants more migrants to leave. So they double on what they call the sweetener aid, right? They're actually given 5,000 euros, or they can receive up to 5,000 euros in cash or subsidies to basically leave, because that will be the cheapest option. It's very expensive to have these people there. As you said, they don't integrate. What I hope comes in the wake of something like this and proposals or laws or whatever this is actually at this point, a policy, I would assume, that they also make sure to enforce it, because, Kim, we've seen where the same individual can enter into a country under multiple pseudonyms, right, or identities. If you're not obliged to have identity documents with you, they can say whatever they want. They can say, they can actually be 30 years old and they can say, I'm 18. And that's happened in many cases, right? Remember the dentist in Sweden that exposed that the teeth in some of these people he was helping was far older than what he said? There's people looking at joints and things like that, doctors, and like, this guy is like 30 years old and they claim to be 17, right? So they take advantage of the system and they say, oh, now I'm three individuals. I get three different dividends or welfare checks a month, right? So they take advantage of us too, on top of it.
Yeah. Well, first they should, just like you do when there's an accident, you first stop the accident. If it's on the road, you make sure that no further accident will happen. So you put out signs and you get people away from the road. And then you begin to do what else you have to do to help the people who are injured. If it's a fire, of course you should do the same thing there. And with this immigration, first thing is to stop the accident. I mean, stop totally influx. Because it makes no sense to pay people to go home if you still have influx.
Yeah,
I mean, with the internet and all this, it will rumor out and people will know this within no time that, okay,
I can go there just to get money to leave. Exactly, yeah, it's like a tourist. You go, can you make it there? And then you just get money to leave. Exactly, so there's a lot of problems with these kinds of things as well. I get what they're coming from, but it could only be injunction in connection to a strong and existing border, so you know who's coming in and who's going, and one of the obligations would have to be that they would be biometrically tagged, not tagged, but like that you take their fingerprints, you let a computer take their retina scan or something like that, so you know that they can't just enter in again under a different name or something.
Yeah. And all these things are very good, but it all takes money. So I would say, why not just stop all the influx right now? And you don't have to then spend all these worries and money on all this stuff.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. All right, so what would you like to leave us with here? Either where it's about the petition or the proposal that could be signed, or if there's anything else about the situation in Denmark. What's the plan to get this out there further?
Yeah, I would say that if you are a Danish person listening to this and you live in like United States or in Sweden or somewhere else and you've been living there for a while, you're not allowed to support this. You have to be able to vote in Denmark before you can support this proposition. But what you can do is that you can share with people who live in Denmark, with your relatives. And that way we can get it out there. And then you can, we are building up, constructing a homepage now that is, that you are going to list below, Henrik. And it's not finished yet, but what is going to be on this homepage is we're going to collect all the debate that hopefully is going to be around this question. And we're going to list all the articles about the history behind treason, the history about this this proposition, this possibility that citizens can actually raise a proposition, because that's also an interesting history. It's a very communist party that has actually made this possible some years ago. So it's funny that a communist party is actually helping nationalist now to get forward.
Yeah, isn't that funny? Huh? Exactly, they wanted to go after national socialists, what they called traitors at that time. But I guess in a fate of irony, that it's interesting that that could be twisted around, and you can get something to help nationalists in Denmark today under this. So, but that's what it is. Yeah. Those who are in power, you know, their feet must always be held to the fire, as they say. They need to be held accountable. And it's so easy too, right? Think of this, that many of these people on the left, and they're by any means not the only problem. There's conservatives is equally bad and all that stuff. We know this now, but the people who are involved in the population replacement, we should say, it's very easy for them to be, now when they're in charge, when their narrative is the ruling narrative, to be dismissive of free speech, to be dismissive of all the things that they did to end up in power, all the mechanisms that they used and all the things that they argued and propagated and said, well, you have to allow us to speak about this, and this is tyranny, this is fascism, right? All this nonsense that they're saying, shutting down speech or whatever. Well, they're equally bad. It was never about those principles. It was about them ending up in charge so that they could dictate.
Yeah, and that's true, and that's why this homepage, this website, is also going to be documentary, because when time runs, and let's say 5 or 10 years from now, we will have documented a lot of the players. We're not going to say anybody is a traitor, because that's illegal, I guess. But we're going to list a lot of the players, both on the good side, you could say, or we're not even going to say which side is good or bad. We're just going to list people and just bring some articles and bring what they have said in the public debate, and make it up to people themselves to make up their mind what they think about this stuff. And so in 5-10 years time, we'll have built up a lot of stuff about treason and what treason is, for everybody to use if they like that.
All right. That's wonderful. It's a good resource. And, of course, it's the time is now. The hour is dire, as I say. Let's hammer this point here now towards the end of what people should do and where they can go for this, because I just typed in, and you can pronounce this in Danish so the Danish audience gets this properly, but Straffelovens kapitel 12.
Yeah.
Right? That will give you a little bit further down on Google, whatever search engine you're using. I will take you to borgerförslag.dk. That's the link you need to look for. That's where where people can sign this to aid you in the process, correct?
That's correct. And for Danish people, it will maybe be easiest to remember borgerforslag, the borger, the citizen proposal.
Yep.
The borgerforslag, if you type that into Google and you go to borgerforslag homepage, then, yeah, exactly, that's it. Then there's a search option, and you can actually search there, and you can just type in, like, treason, landsforræderi, or something like that. And there you go, actually. They're all below there. You have all the propositions that have been made by citizens. And very funny, there's a proposition days after our.
There it is, right there. By the way, it's currently. Yeah, exactly. If you guys are watching this now, here it's being recorded on Tuesday the 17th. If you're watching this just a day or so after, it should still be on the front page, actually, but down there. So check that out for Straffelovens kapitel 12.
And there's a funny thing. If you enlarge a bit and go up to the but go down again.
Okay.
Yeah, and just above our proposition, I think it is the number. With the 63 there.
That one, 63. Yeah.
There's some, I can't see it, but I think it's something like...
I'm going full screen on that.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody has proposed that it should be illegal to use our flag in a political party's logo.
Yeah, Dannebrog, that's right. That's the Danish flag. Dannebrog, yeah.
Which is crazy, but it just looks... It's just to say how the two different parties in Denmark, you could say, the coming parties are going to be, do you call it juxtaposed?
Yep.
Or against each other, right?
Yeah,
The borderlines are being drawn right now of those who wants to be nationalistic and those who wants to be on the immigrant side.
Yeah, that's the lines that are drawn now. It's globalism versus nationalism. That's where it is. It's not about left and right and all of there's some, you know, traditions in that. And yes, the left traditionally has done, I think, the majority of the damage, at least from a cultural point of view, of bringing this mentality, this cultural morality that we have right now, that has undermined the nation. But as I said, in recent years, the right has been right there with them. The capitalist system has been right there with them. And now, as far as I'm concerned, they're all globalists, right? Either you're a globalist, or you're a nationalist, and you want to do what's good for the nation. And although we have different parties and stuff like that, it's basically what path are we going to take towards globalism? That's all that differs, right, between them.
Yeah, that's and I agree with that. But I also think that there's another way to see it, and that is the nationalists against those who are either immigrants or pro-immigrants.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, you're pro Danish or anti Danish, right? That's the the difference.
And that's and we have a lot of that, you know, when people call each other bad names in Denmark in the public area, one of them is racist, right? You know that in Sweden as well, and the other one that is the same but on the nationalist part of it is traitor of the country. Mm. So those words we are building on a lot of bad words that we can call each other, but just to show you how the fronts are built up now, maybe to a coming conflict.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's so sad, you know. And again, at the end of it, who would benefit? Obviously, globalism benefits. Oh, the people that wanted to destroy the countries are the ones that are going to benefit. It's much easier to tear down, to destroy, and to sunder than it is to build something up and doing something which is good, you know. But again, I think that the when people are really starting to become dedicated and concerned and fully invested in the question of what kind of future are your children going to grow up in, that's when I think we're going to see a lot of things changing. I hope it's as quickly as possible, because We're driving towards the cliff and the abyss is like right there, to be honest. But there's still time, and there's a lot of variables that could change. Demographics could change. Immigration laws could change. Repatriation could change. The economy might change. Conflict might change, which means that people might leave out of their own voluntary fruition because conditions are bad in the country they entered into. There's so many things that can happen. And the end takeaway, I think, which we should leave on, Kim, and I want your thoughts on this too, but it's for goodness sake, don't be black-pilled. Don't be pessimistic. Don't think it's all over and it's gone, because that's a big lie. That's what the enemy wants you to believe, so that you will give up before you've even started the fight. There is a 1,001 different variables and things that could happen. There's a million paths this could take, and we have to work hard and we have to be dedicated in spreading the word about this and waking up as many people as possible so that we can turn things around. That's what it's about.
Exactly. And if somebody feels black-pilled, and I think it's a good thing is to engage yourself in some kind of community. Like in Sweden, you can go to the Free Sweden and do some things there and get some friends, because it's much easier when you get brainwashed, you could say, by some people that you like and some people who are nationalistic. Much easier to be positive about the future.
Indeed. So help
Kim. And also say that every time has had its own things to fight. And our time, we have this to fight. And we should just go on and begin to fight it, because that's what our ancestors has done.
This is the great battle of our time. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
This is exactly. Other people have had... they've had world wars to fight. They've had other conflicts and things and hardships and stuff. But this is our fight, and people need to get involved in it. Otherwise, it's going to be over. All it takes for evil to prevail, and I do believe that these people are evil, no matter how well intended they are. As you say, the path to good the road to hell is paved with good intentions, as they say, right?
That's right.
And these internationalists, these globalists, they have a clear goal in mind. They know what they want to do, and that aspiration, I believe, is evil. And all it takes for evil to prevail is for good men to sit down and do nothing and just sit on their ass all day. So get involved. Get, you know, begin by raising awareness, and as Kim said, send this to people. Send this to your Danish friends, your family, post it in comments, in forums, post it on sites that which are open and public, make YouTube videos about it, make podcasts and shows, spread the word, and we're going to have a link to it down below as well in the description, so you have a direct link to it. Help to get it out. Anything else you'd like to leave us with, Kim, before we wrap up here for today?
Yeah, just one more thing, that you can also go in the commentaries, and if people are talking about something and you can say they're actually angry about immigration or beginning to become angry about it, then you could also leave a comment about this proposition and say, here's something you can do.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, yeah. Kim. This is great having you here. We'll definitely have to stay in touch and have you back again on the show to discuss updates and what's happening and whatnot. Thank you so much for being there, for doing what you're doing, for being brave and being out there with your face, and realize that we have to speak out, and we have to speak out collectively. We can't wait. There's no time. Time is running out, and everyone has to get engaged with this. So keep up the good fight, Kim, and thank you so much again for coming on. We'll have a link to landsforedre.dk, the Danish site that we're talking about, the traders or trader site. Yep. So if you're watching this in the future or in the archives later on, guys, the link might be up and running right now, so definitely check it out. But thank you, Kim. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, and thank you, Henrik.
There goes Kim Eriksen. Thank you so much for watching today, guys. Hope you enjoyed that. I think it was a great interview. Very interesting initiative. And, of course, this is what's necessary. More people speaking out, more people daring to say something and take initiative to try to change something. And just for the sake of spreading the word, right, of getting that out there. But there will be a day when the number is large enough of those who are concerned with the future of our countries. When the number is great enough, then these individuals which have done this to us are going to be held accountable. So this is a great step in that direction, and I hope that you guys will support it and support Kim as well in his effort to spread this far and wide to everybody. So as I said, great having you here. We're going to be back with more soon. We have Angelo John Gage coming up. We're going to talk with him about what's happened to Trump, the neocons that have taken over foreign policy. We're also going to be talking about the outrage surrounding Tucker Carlson. This left-wing activist group has basically gone after old radio shows that it did 10 years ago or so to try to get him fired off of Fox. We'll talk about that, and also the Ilhan Omar controversy and this anti-hate bill that has been passed. So we'll talk about that and much more with Angelo John Gage coming up here for our next featured interview. Then, of course, after that, we have Flashback Friday on Friday, live streaming to YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And then we also have Weekend Warrior coming up after that, exclusive for our members. Check it out at redicemembers.com. Thank you to all our members. We do appreciate your help and your continued support of this alternative media platform. We can't do this without you. Most of the second part of the interviews that we do are available at redicemembers.com as well. Some interviews we only do one segment, some we do extended like we did today. But there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours, both in the archives going back all the way to 2006, but also, as I said, the second part, the second hour of many of the shows that we have as well. Much more coming soon. Thank you guys for watching. We'll be back before you know it. Until then, take care, stay brave, and we'll talk to you guys soon.